know more about what matters in your life because you listen to the Pensacola Expert Panel with Jenna Barr. 9 till 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The views and opinions expressed here on the Pensacola Expert Panel are not those necessarily of News Radio 92.3 1620, but those of Terrence A. Gross of Gross & Schuster, attorney at law.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Welcome back to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm Jenna Barr. Joining me now by phone is Terrence A. Gross. Good morning, Terrence. I haven't talked to you in so long. How are you?
I'm doing well. But I hate to throw cold water on the show. But since the last time we did talk, I have to announce to the public that we did lose my law partner, Mr. Schuster. So he passed from cancer last week. We will have a memorial service next month. But anyway, so he was my partner for 20 years, my friend for 45 years.
I am so sorry for your loss. Terry, that's a huge loss, and he's a great man. So we'll be sure to be thinking of you and honor him. So thank you for sharing that with us today.
Yeah, and I'd like to move on, but I will also say that what I do now have in the law office, where I'm fortunate, is I have both of my sons in with me and my son-in-law. So I got three young bucks, and they bring a lot of technology with them and a different way of practicing. And they're actually pushing me to modernize my practice. So I'm kind of an old school dinosaur. So it's been a good mix. And so anyway, as a personal injury lawyer, I always come prepared, as you well know, with topics. And I wanted to give the public two instances where on a regular personal injury case, I actually have to hire another lawyer, either a guardianship lawyer or an estate lawyer. And usually those are the same type lawyers. I mean, one lawyer would do all that because most estate lawyers, they do guardianships and estate work. So the scenarios are two. One is if I settle a case for a minor, and the other one is if I'm representing an estate, such as someone that died in a car wreck. But let's start with the minor. So decades ago, what would happen would be some young minor gets in a bad accident. The family gets a lawyer. The lawyer gets a settlement. The proceeds go to the parents. The minor sort of knows about it. And then the minor turns 18. He goes, Mommy, Daddy, where's my money for that settlement that you got for that lawyer long ago? Darling, we spent it. We had obligations. I'm sorry, it's gone. Well, those days are now gone. So that scenario will not play out because the law has set up mechanisms and the very strict mechanisms about what lawyers like myself mandates what we have to do if we settle a case for minors. And there's certain ways to get around it a little bit, and I'll explain it. So the first rule is that there is no governance. The court doesn't even get involved if the settlement of gross proceeds, if the settlement is less than $15,000, I guess they deem it so small that it's just not worth getting the court involved, because if you have a $15,000 settlement, you figure the lawyer's going to get five. There's got to be some kind of medical bills outstanding, so maybe the minor maybe get $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000, depending on what the medical bills are. So the court doesn't, you know, they let the lawyer just settle the case and give the money to the parents with the hope that the parents will keep that money for the child once they reach the age of majority. So there have been instances. Let's say I think the case is worth $16,000 or $17,000. Would I rather have $14,900 or get $16,000 or $17,000? I'll take the $14,900. Why? Because if you have to get a guardianship lawyer involved, the retainer usually is about $2,500. So you got to hire this lawyer, pay him $2,500. They got to file a petition, and then you have court hearings that drags out. So it's just much easier. Now, if the case is worth $25,000 or $30,000, I'm certainly not going to sell it for $14,900. The other little trick I do is a lot of times we get these kids, you know, they're minors, but they're teenagers, maybe even driving. And if I'm getting close to a settlement and I see that my minor is now 17 years old, 17 years and 1 month, 70 years and 4 months, I'll usually bring everybody in and say, it would behoove us all to take a time out on this case and wait 9 months or 8 months or 10 months till the child is magically 18 and deemed an adult. And that way we don't have to do any of this extra paperwork and expense of going through a guardianship. But many cases, you know, I've represented kids. I got one right now. The girl was 8 years old at the time of the accident. She's probably only 10 now. We've settled for 60, so now we have to go to court. We go to court next week, in fact. And the judge is going to do many things. First, the judge is going to ask me some questions to make sure that the settlement was good. It's the judge's job to oversee, and was this a reasonable settlement on behalf of the child? That's the first query. And then number two is, now what do we do with these proceeds, okay? For the case I've settled at 60, of course my fees are 20, one-third. I have to pay $2,500 for the estate lawyer. There's some bills out there. But invariably, the child is going to get certainly over $30,000. What do you do with that money? And there's just different ways to skin a cat. Sometimes some judges will allow us to put the money in a 529 plan. And I don't know if people are familiar with that, but that's a college savings account. Works just like an IRA, which means you could put it in, it grows tax-free, you don't pay taxes on those proceeds. And then once college comes, and if there's anything, whether it be tuition, whether it be sorority dues, whether it be books, whether it be apartments or whatever it may be, as long as they're related to the going to college, then you could use that money with no penalty. But like an IRA, if you take it out early, then you're going to get penalized and taxed and so forth. So it's a good vehicle, but the kid has to go to college. And if this given child never goes to college, then you kind of got a problem that way. So there's also a uniform account for minors. It's actually a special account. And you go to most financial planners are familiar with it, and you set these up, and that's a very common practice. And there's some type of mutual funds or a mutual fund, and it just grows for the child, and the parents can't have access to it. They'd have to petition the court. So if the child was 10 years old when the money went in, and now they've turned 16, what does every 16-year-old child want? Tell me.
Probably a car. I mean, that's what was on my mind.
Not a probably. There's no probably. It's a card. And
freedom,
every case I get, if they're anywhere around 16, if they're 15 and a half, we're already talking about a car. So invariably, if you got this 10-year-old child when the money went in, I'll bet you at 16, they're going to petition the court, you know, can you earmark 10, 12, 15,000 for this child to get a used car? And probably most judges would grant that wish and say, okay, it's for the child, they're 16. I don't see why a judge would say no. And in fact, we just had a case where I settled and the girl was 15 and a half, but already, you know, so I think they had picked out a car for $16,000, and the judge said, okay, we'll let you do that. And you know, we're getting authority to get, you know, to use that money before she turns 18 for a car for herself. So anyway, so it's just that kind of latitude. I've had judges approve trips, family trips to Disney. You know, you say the judges have a heart, and it is the minor's money, and if it goes to their benefit. But the whole purpose of that law is to protect the child, to make sure that the parents don't take off with the money and use it for their own personal needs. And not the child. So there's reason for it, but it does get a little hinky. It can cause delays, and every judge is different. So we have these hearings. I probably have one every other month, and depending on the judge, some judges are sticklers and ask all these questions, and other judges, it's perfunctory, and they're ready to do a rubber stamp and approve you know, the settlements and with no strings attached. So it just varies from judge to judge, case to case. And a lot of it has to do with how much money. The more money that the minor child is going to get, of course, the more scrutiny the judge is going to give. So that's one angle where I get these so-called estate-type lawyers involved. The other is with wrongful death. So if my client dies, I mean, if the person that was injured in the car wreck dies, then, of course, an estate has to be opened. A personal representative has to be appointed. And here, these cases get dicey. They get real dicey because maybe Jane Doe died in the car wreck, but she could have three children, and they're at odds with each other. So child A may retain me. Child B may go to a different lawyer, and child C to a different lawyer. And now you're not just the insurance company for whoever killed this person, but the so-called survivors are fighting over proceeds, and who the personal representative is the big deal. So these cases could be quite complex, and I've found that it happens more than you think, where the so-called survivors are at odds with each other. So if you get a settlement, how do you dispose of it, and so forth? And I just settled one this year where I had a adult father and his two real young sons, I mean very young, like 4-year-old and 6-year-old. The mother died, and we just agreed, and the judge approved it. We just proposed it because the kids aren't going to say anything. They're 4 and 6 years old, but the judge allowed us to say 50% for the dad and 25% for each child, which kind of seemed fair if you got to play Solomon, and that's what we did. And it was a rather big settlement, and of course she died, so you can imagine it was a big settlement. And all that 25% for each child went into one of those uniform minor children's accounts, so they're in a lockbox, so to speak, with a financial planner. And so by the time these children reach 18 years old and would have access to this money, I presume it will have tripled by then, because money's going to triple every several years if it's invested wisely. So anyway, these are things that just come up.
So does this drag out the settlement? Does this drag out like the settlement process? Is there a way to?
Yes.
Okay, I figured it did.
But not horribly. I mean, because it's not opposed. So it just depends on the lawyer. The lawyer I use is a young fella that just gets the job done. So normally, if I settle the case, the first thing I do is I get a hold of the parents and say, you need to contact this lawyer because he's got to interview them. He's got to know all kinds of facts about, the dates of birth. And a lot of times, in this day and age, the child's living with the biological mother and the stepfather, and the biological father is nowhere to be seen. And so there's all kinds of family dynamics. So he's got to figure all that out. And then we got to, I give a spreadsheet of the settlement, so that's my part, and that's easy. But anyway, I would say from the time I contact the lawyer to the time we get a hearing with the judge is usually 4 to 6 months. So even though we settle, now we got to wait another 4 to 6 months for court approval. And you get, it's just a 15 or 30-minute Zoom hearing in this day and age, and there's nobody opposing us. But again, these judges, some judges ask a lot of questions and some don't. Some just, they know me. They know me by reputation.
Right.
And then they know this other lawyer. So a lot of times we're up there and then, it's just some small talk and it's a 5-minute hearing and they approve it and then we move on. And then other ones, it could get gummed up, depending on what they want.
Okay. Hey, I just want to remind you, if you have a question for Terrence, please call or text in 850-437-1620. Here's a question here. When a spouse gets hurt in a wreck, does the other spouse have to sign off on proposed settlements?
The answer is probably 99% of the time that is true. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do is it's called consortium. I'll never forget, I was, of course, when I started law school, I was only 22 years old. So I went right from college, right to law school, never took time off. And so they started that consortium, and some people are sort of giggling because most of us knew sort of what it meant. and assumed that it was only for loss of sexual services, which could be very true. Somebody gets a bad whiplash. If the wife has a horrible whiplash with headaches and neck pain and back pain, she's probably not in the mood to fiddle around with her husband, and that could be a big part of the case. But consortium is way more than that. Maybe the wife was the one that always cut the grass, you know, and now the husband is. Maybe the husband's now bathing the children, you know, taking over. Maybe the wife always did the dishes, now the husband. So there's, you know, if you're married, so juries don't tend to give a lot for consortium, but it's certainly when an insurance company settles, they want a full release. They're not going to pay money. In fact, we just settled a case. It was in litigation, so what the insurance company did, because they wanted no problems with the release, so they said, well, we'll give you $50,000 of this case, but we want $49,000 to go to the injured lady, and we want the husband to sign off for $1,000. So they're earmarking $1,000, you know, for the husband, but that's rare that they do it. But the answer to the question is a great question. That's why a lot of times I'll be just meeting with the wife. She's injured. I've never even met her husband. He doesn't come in. Maybe he's working. Maybe he's busy. And I have numerous appointments, and then we settle. At that last appointment, she's got to bring the husband in, and they sign. There's no defendant that's going to give you money and leave anything open.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned before I was in a horrible car accident in 2013, and we had multiple lawyers involved, yes, because there were multiple cars, and I couldn't take care of my kids for a couple of months. So I understand the question a little bit more and what you're saying. So that's it brings a little bit more light to that concern.
Well, sorry to hear that you went through all that. So you probably know a lot of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there is an oddity also where I have to get an estate planning lawyer involved, and it seems so unfair. And here it is. It makes no sense to me. But let's say I'm representing you. So you get a whiplash in a car wreck, and maybe there's some elderly person they messed up, and they hit you, and you got a whiplash. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe a year later we find out that this elderly person died. It had nothing to do with your case. I mean, they just died of old age. They had a heart attack or a stroke or something, and they died. Well, guess what? We are bound at that point, once we get knowledge of it, to open up an estate for the defendant. So the person that hit you that you've got no relationship, we got to spend your money. Because any money I spend for you, you got to reimburse me when we settle. But we are required, if they don't have an estate, if they haven't opened it, if they've opened one, fine. But if a lot of people don't open up estates, maybe they don't have much. Maybe it's an old man, he's married to his wife, and the house is in joint names, the car's in joint names, and the bank account's joint names. Well, there is no estate. I mean, it passes directly to the person. So we are required to pay money to open up an estate as kind of it's a vehicle to sue. So when we actually sue, it'll be whoever that personal representative is. And then we got to figure out, we don't even know these people, and we got to figure out who's the personal representative. And it's really unwieldy. It's ungainly. I don't like it, but it's the law, and we have to do it. But again, that's just an added expense. So sometimes in these personal injury cases, whether it be for a minor, whether it be for a wrongful death because one of my clients died or loved ones died, or the defendant died, we're sitting here retaining, bringing in estate-type guardianship lawyers to help us with those proceedings and paperwork and deal with the courts. And again, on the wrongful death side, I can give you examples where there was a very prominent the man owned a security company, very prominent man in Pensacola about 20 years ago, was hit head on Interstate 10 by a drunken driver and killed. So he's killed. And some of the family reached out to me to represent them, and I said, of course I'll do that. Meanwhile, he had other children, and some of them went to another lawyer. So now we got two different lawyers supposedly representing the family, but there comes that infight. So it wasn't just fighting the drunken driver that caused the wreck. We're now dealing, you know, with how do we split up these proceeds, and Daddy loved me more than he loved you. You never did anything for Daddy. I did, and all this kind of stuff. And you can get really hung up on it.
Yeah, and then you add all the emotions into it too, and it kind of becomes it becomes a long, drawn out process, and it's just a lot on people. And you have to pick the right lawyer to help you sort through a lot of that.
That, and also the law. You know, the law has got so many twists and turns in it.
Oh yeah.
So even with that case, here's the twist of that case. I know we got a few minutes left, but the Wrongful Death Act, we just talked about minors being 18. So most of our laws say that once you reach 18, you're an adult. We as parents don't really believe it, but the law magically says they're an adult at 18. Well, the Wrongful Death Act says anybody under 25 is a minor, and it says all minors have a right to recover loss of companionship and society and comfort. In other words, pain and suffering damages. So if you've got, and in our case, we had three daughters that were just wonderful. They loved their father. You know, they were with their father for Father's Day and birthdays, and just really, really good daughters. And meanwhile, they had a younger brother who was the wayward son. He's in and out of rehab. He's a stoner, but he was 23. So the law says he gets to bring the pain and suffering claim. They can't, because they were over 25 years old, which seemed to me totally arbitrary and capricious and unfair. That once again, we're dealing with the Wrongful Death Act. And meanwhile, this man had also remarried, not these kids' mother. You know, it was a trophy wife that, you know, been married a couple years. And then, of course, she had her hand in the pie. So actually, I think we had three different claimants out there, and all their agendas were very different. And we spent more time fighting over that than we did, you know, with the drunken driver. So that's a very typical scenario.
Yeah, and there's a lot of moving pieces, and like you mentioned, the law is complex and it changes, and you have to. I mean, that's what you're there for the person who's been going through all of this in the past, and they're coming up, and they already have so much emotion, or even the injuries behind it too, on top of it. And so I appreciate you bringing all of this to us and be able to teach us every week and share with us. I want to give you some time in the last minute to just recap the importance of reaching out and the timeline that people should reach out and obtain a personal injury lawyer after an accident.
Well, the statute of limitations in Florida is very liberal in most cases, 4 years, but you should really contact a lawyer as soon as possible just to know your rights. The insurance companies set up and they're there to minimize your case and do everything they can to help you diminish it. They want to take recorded statements. They want to do this and that and the other. So why not know your rights and see a lawyer? If you try to do it yourself, you probably got a fool for a client. Then again, this is Terrence Gross. We have 5 offices throughout Northwest Florida: Pensacola, Milton, Crestview, Fort Walton, and Navarre. Our phone number in Pensacola is 850-434-3333. We have a great website. Our website's very informational, 64 pages. We have a website on wrongful death. We have it on car wrecks, all the things. I hear we're out of time. This is Terrence Gross. Be back in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Terrence, so much for joining us. Hey, join us tomorrow morning. Travis Thompson of Climatech will be here to answer your questions, as well as First City Arts Center. We'll talk to you then.
News, talk, traffic, and weather. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.